Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we are in Feedback Friday. So, as you could tell, Wednesday we didn't have a show. We basically ended up re-airing, I believe, Monday's show. I didn't spend too long trying to figure that out. I was trying to figure out why we didn't have internet. And so our internet service has been somewhat unreliable. And I don't know if they're just doing upgrades or, you know, heaven forbid, somebody had a fatality accident that knocked out a hub or something like that. But anywho, for the most part, we kind of take for granted some of the services that we have. And unfortunately, there's really no competition. I mean, do you really believe you have competition for the internet and for your, you know, home phone services? I can acknowledge that you kind of have wireless competition a little bit. But it's only the big players. There are small players that are coming in, but it's really hard for them to get a foothold because they have to pay rent to all of the towers that they use or you use as you travel around your community using their service. Anyway, I'm not an advocate for making everything public, but there are those people that truly believe that keeping everything private so that, you know, we have this illusion of competition. You don't have competition for your water. You don't have competition for the road system. I mean, is your neighbor building a road system that, you know, you're helping pay for so that you guys can use it and only, you know, only you guys can use? I mean, if everybody did that, if everybody had the money and the resources to do that, just imagine, you know, the pavement that would be laid out throughout, you know, throughout America. I mean, America would become paved completely, and we would have lost. And you know what? That plays right into the globalist hands of surrendering our food supply and surrendering our ability to grow our own food. So we've reached a point in civil society that does require a level of working together, cooperation, and making the best decisions. I don't believe that that needs and nor should ever be centralized. I believe that the power of the controls of all of that should be down at the county level to where everybody can kind of have these autonomous controls for your own county. And then at the state level, you kind of work out the agreement of what you're willing to have and share powers with the state. But never, never two steps removed. In other words, we should never give the federal government any authority over domestic matters. The Constitution and the whole design of the system was never to give them that. They were, as Madison stated, they were external facing. I mean, their focus and concentration was strictly on external objects, such as war, peace, protecting our borders, protecting our sovereignty, controlling trade coming in, making sure that we weren't aligning with hostile nations. I mean, we're in bed with nations that are trying to destroy us and organizations that are literally trying to kill us. And so there's a lot to go through. There's so much feedback that I need to get through that I'm not going to be able to get to it. But folks, keep hitting me with some of the comments and so forth. One of the most important things that we want to just kind of go through, because I just want to make sure I do this, since it was March 7th when they announced the FedNow, when they publicly came out and said, we're going to go to a digital banking system. We're getting rid of your dollars. And so at this point in time, or I should say at that point in time, I believe the original price on gold at in March, and we got it here, it was 1814, and the original price on silver was 2007. And so it's $20.07. And so as we look at the current pricing today, well, actually, let me just kind of pull it up for right now, for this morning, and or for actually for this afternoon, for many of you, it is $1931 for gold. So gold has gone up basically $100, and silver has gone up a couple of bucks, because if actually almost $4, because it's $23.70. I've been an advocate, and I've been telling people that you need to have and you need to put money aside so that you have some bartering value. I know that you probably, you know, there's probably some people that, you know, really rely upon either their looks or rely upon their, you know, their talents or what have you. But that 9 times out of 10 isn't enough when it really comes down to a high competition for a very, very finite amount of some commodity, let's say food. So when it comes down to food, you know, there's people, well, you know, we can barter firewood for some food or something like that. And it was, oh, by the way, do you live in a community that does not allow you to have chickens? Now, we've been hoping that we could get, and I'm poking somebody who shall remain nameless. We're hoping to get a petition, but if you want to take a hand at writing a petition, this is all you really need to state, that, you know, we have inalienable rights. And as a matter of fact, I would point you to the Ninth Amendment. And so the Ninth Amendment is really very clear. It says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Folks, you have an inalienable right to provide for yourself. You have an inalienable right to sustain your own life. And so the point that I'm trying to make here is that you have a right to actually have your own chickens if you have enough of a yard. I mean, if you live in a co-op housing, like apartments, condos, those types of things where you don't have your own yard, then I'm sorry, you can't have chickens, because, you know, it's unless your co-op actually goes and says, we're going to have a chicken coop for everybody. Well, good luck with that, because 9 times out of 10, there's this little, you know, this lesson we learned with the Pilgrims, and it's called the Tragedy of the Commons. And so you can go down that path and attempt to, you know, have a communal chicken farm or what have you. But unless you divide it up, and unless you let those people who really want to run it, and then they can sell at a, you know, whatever the costs are, what have you, eggs, chicken, and what have you. Because there's going to be people there that will take advantage of you. And that's because they'll go down and they'll get the eggs, as soon, you know, they'll get wake up extra early just to get their free eggs. Even though they don't have any chickens in there, they haven't done anything to contribute. That's called the Tragedy of the Commons, people taking advantage. And this kind of lends to this paradigm that I have, that I don't think people have changed. I don't believe that when I look at the times of the framers, of the times of the Constitution, how many people really got involved in the Constitutional Convention? Government was just plugging along. The average person had no idea what the heck happened up in Massachusetts regarding the Shay Rebellion. Only those few people that rose up in Massachusetts, and other people were, you know, being pressed, or, you know, in some states, but in other states that were diligent in paying off their debt and so forth, and these were the bigger states. Well, okay, what's the big deal? And for the most part, they still didn't quantify the danger, the public danger in the government failing. Now, we're at a point here where the government, and as a matter of fact, I've had this conversation just this week, and it's important that we bring this up. We're at a point where the government is going to fail. There's way too many people that do not understand what is happening, and this failure is a fraudulent failure. In other words, there are a group of, if you want to call them criminals, but if there's a group of conspirators over the annals of our history, excuse me, that have done things that have set up systems and set up government that is unconstitutional. And they've given themselves powers to do things they have no authority to do. And so today, those powers and authority have been aggrandized, you know, to ad nauseum. And those powers that they're assuming more and more and more today are built upon the assumption of unconstitutional powers. And I get so frustrated because I can't tell you how many times, and I know I'm not talking about you who are listening. Actually, I'm talking about those folks that I know that don't listen on a regular basis. They only, you know, listen in for a minute and they go, oh, this is just content. I don't care about this. And so they don't tune in. And then what they do is they send me a bunch of garbage that they're consuming. And they're going, have you seen this video? Are you hearing what these people are talking about? These people are spot on. And I don't want to say that they are spot on. Nine times out of 10, there's problems with a lot of what a lot of people are asserting because they don't have the full context of the Constitution. I mean, how many times do you ever hear people in the same video talking about the UN, talking about the World Health Organization, talking about global governance, the globalists and all of this stuff? How many times have you told, have they told you that the Constitution has never, the states via the Constitution have never delegated the power to the federal government to subjugate us to another governing body? In other words, they can't make a treaty with the UN and say, we're all in, go ahead and govern us. They can't do it. They don't have the authority. Now, oh, they did it and they've been doing it. But all of that is unconstitutional. And guess what? If you go through the history of the UN is notorious for creating all of these, you know, globalist governance systems and so forth. And the World Health Organization is one of those. And so when we look at all of these things, oh, they're doing this and they're doing that. Folks, why are you running around with your heads cut off? If you listen and you read these petitions that we're giving you, these should actually calm you down and get you to stand up and demand your Constitution and the rule of law prevail. Either you live in a time and land of tyranny and you have surrendered the Constitution, or you live in a land that respects and acknowledges your inalienable rights and is actually a land that functions by the rule of law. There's way too many people running around. Actually, you know, the reason I'm bringing up the chickens is because they've created laws that make it impossible for you. If you live in an HOA, you can't have a chicken coop. Since when? Oh, well, you signed that contract. Folks, there is no contract enforceable in the United States that can take away your inalienable rights. What that does is it violates the supreme law of the land. Just remember, enumerations, oh, they can create contracts. They can create these powers. The Ninth Amendment says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights, like contract rights, that you can actually surrender your rights, cannot be construed to deny or disparage others retained by you, your right to survive. And it is a sad day that we actually have to slap around a bunch of Americans who want us to live in a tyrannical world. I get the fact that we don't want to have, you know, our homeowners association doesn't want to have houses that turn into blight or what have you. Or, you know, the pink or the radical colors. You know, you don't want that. But to be honest with you, folks, does that really affect your home value? Now, let's be honest. Let's look at it this way. When you sell your home or when you buy a home and you're walking in and they say the value of this home is based on this, and they're basically trying to confine it to the HOA. But 9 times out of 10, your seller will basically tell you that, oh, well, your value is based on similar homes in the area, and that includes outside of the HOA. It doesn't matter if you live in an HOA or outside of an HOA. The value of your home is based upon the greater community. But the real value of your home is the perceived value of the buyer. That is the reality. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to give you something, a little insight. So my wife and I, in our previous life, when we were conscripted to the communist state of California, we actually painted our house a canary yellow. And when I say canary yellow, this thing was so bright that it was up before the sunshine and it was illuminating the neighborhood, and the neighbors did not like it. And as a matter of fact, when the realtors came by, I mean, this was a rock and roll home. And what I mean by that is, you know, you'd actually look, you know, from the water features and everything else, you'd think that a rock. We spent an exorbitant amount. I mean, there's no way we got our money back out of that home. We put a lot of money in that home thinking that we were going to be safe living in California the rest of our lives. And it was shortly after we sunk the last like $250,000 into it when we realized with a full outdoor kitchen, everything, we finally realized, wow, you know, California does not care about our property rights. They're actually going to destroy, you know, and we saw the sustainable housing coming in to where they were literally doing a fast line from bringing people from LA into our community and the surrounding community. Again, I lived in a community that was really a remote community that was a bedroom community, which was protected from, you know, apartments and those types of things. There was hardly any apartments out in our area, hardly any. The largest concentration of low-income housing were not trailer parks, but trailer homes in, you know, old, undeveloped areas. And when I say old, I'm talking about 50, 60 years old. So anyway, so we painted this house bright yellow. And when I actually interviewed 7 realtors to come in, one after another. They all had 1 hour, and when one was leaving, the other one saw, they kind of, you know, shook each other's hands and they go, what the heck's going on here? You know, they didn't realize that, you know, I was scrutinizing them, not allowing them to scrutinize me. And all of them told me there's no way I could sell this house for any figure over this number. And it was way low. It was being driven by the value of all of the homes in the surrounding area. And I said, no, we're going to put this thing on the market and we're going to put it up for what they thought was an exorbitant amount. And I said, I know I can sell this house at this price. And they go, no, you can't. There's no way anybody will come in because we're going to be beaten down on the comps. And I go, I don't care what the comps are. When somebody walks in and sees the granite floors, when they see this home, they're going to say, I want this home. And the realtor will go, it's overpriced. And that person will say, it's underpriced, because it is the perception of the value of that home. Now, if you take care of your home and you have chicken coops and you have a little, you know, garden and so forth, it does. I mean, you don't even have to have a well-maintained garden or what have you. You are actually increasing the value of that home because you are creating a sustainable house. If you have a generator built into your home, if you have all of these other little features that you add to that home, you're actually increasing. And 9 times out of 10, those types of improvements actually do add the value to that. Now, some people may not want a chicken coop, But I will tell you that you will appeal to people that are actually looking for, you know, a country type of home that they can actually have fresh eggs and sustain themselves and so forth. I mean, there's some people that, you know, go down the path of, you know, a little overboard, right? You've met those people that try to create this egg manufacturing industry where they have, you know, chicken coops on top of chicken coops. And okay. But my point is that we have a right to be able to sustain ourselves and to be able to make our homes our castles. And those, this really goes down to what what we really need to discuss today, because we had a conversation. We, a leader of a state that I work with, and myself, we were on the phone with the ACLJ. Now, I am going to go, and I would ask anybody on social media to find, what is the guy's name? Jay Sekulow. Hold on a quick second. I should have actually had this kind of opened up, but I didn't. And so let me go to his Facebook page, and I will copy the link address. I will go to, okay. Actually, I'll just do, and there you go. It's Jay Sekulow. He's the founder, S-E-K-U-L-O-W. So he's the founder of the ACLJ. So we had a conversation with one of the lawyers there. And so I'm actually going to start engaging Jay on social media, on Facebook, because he has these petitions. And one of the petitions he has is regarding the UN and, you know, the persecution of Christianity. Well, why go to the UN? Why kowtow to an organization we shouldn't even be involved in? I mean, it's wrong that Christians are being persecuted anywhere. Nobody should be persecuted. But for us to be pleading to the UN is playing to a unconstitutional alliance that we shouldn't even be dealing with. That building shouldn't even be on U.S. soil. Our involvement in the UN should be curtailed completely. It should be basically disbanded and removed from our soil. And if we do that, then we're going to find other nations in the world that would rather become a state in the United States than to be a state in that globalist, tyrannical government, because that's what it is. It's a pot of despots. And so anyway, in this conversation, we had this very alarming realization. Now, as we've gone through the Constitution, as we've gone through the ratification debates, we have absolutely got the ground zero definitions of very specific things. And so when we look at all of the concepts and clauses within the Constitution, such as the Privileges and Immunities Clause, such as the First Amendment right of petition and those things, we basically presented the problem that we're facing in one of the states where a food retailer is not allowing, they're actually running off our efforts in getting signatures. And they basically are threatening to arrest and throw a person and file charges and so forth. And so, in other words, they're trying to harass us over our rights to peaceably assemble on that property. And I'm telling you, it's public property. And the new paradigm, the new definition of property is that corporate property is private property. And There's no way in this constitutional republic that that could be so. And so I don't have any time to get into it. So when we come back, I'm going to go through the property rights, private versus public, and the hierarchy of legal superiority. So this way, we can all understand what ended up happening and what the 16th Amendment unintentionally did, because it wasn't anywhere in the debates, but this is how they have elevated corporations to be equal to a sovereign citizen. and are and actually superior to the citizen and our own government. We will be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when we look at the Constitution, who has the ultimate protections? In other words, we the people institute government to do very specific things, and their primary goal is to protect what? I go through this all the time. Their primary goal, the two major objects of government, is to protect our life, to protect the citizen's life, and to protect the citizen's property. Now, does that mean to protect corporate property? No. Corporate lives? Oh, we got to keep these corporates alive. Now, did you just make the connection? Did you just make that connection that the concept of bailing out a company because it's too big to fail. In other words, they're too important. They're too important to die. It's just a piece of paper. And so let the hounds come in and fix the problem, because that's what has to happen. When the American auto industry failed, the only reason they got to be so big is because of the collusion that they had with government in protecting them. And it's the same thing with all of the world corporations. It's all been about protecting them and their lives and property. So what happened? How in the heck did we get this corporate form of government? Well, the 16th Amendment was a part of that, because they needed to change the means of collecting taxes from just the apportionment down to corporations. Now, see, if you really look at how apportionment worked, right? I mean, you looked at every head, and that state would pay based on per capita, per head. They could have gone. As a matter of fact, they considered in doing this, because they could, the apportionment for representation was based on per head, but they could have come up with a different mechanism of taxation, because they could have taxed the state based on its square miles. In other words, Rhode Island would have a very small tax compared to Pennsylvania, Virginia, or the bigger states like today, Alaska and Texas. But they realized that those states could easily be harmed because they're not developed enough. And so it could actually be very bad to do that. And they realized that what is the most important capital that we have as a nation, as a world. And as a matter of fact, this important capital that I'm talking about flies in the face of the globalists, because the globalists want to destroy the majority of this capital. Because the most important capital in our governing system is the people. Because it's the people to create jobs. It's the people to create work. It's the people to create goods and services. we're the most precious capital there is. And this government was modeled and designed to protect that, to protect the people. So when they created the 16th Amendment, they not only had the ability to tax by head, but they had the ability to tax by the organizational head. So let's compare and contrast now. When we look at states that had high manufacturing, well, those states actually paid a lot more in federal income tax or federal taxes based on income, because there was all of the people, let's say 80% of the people of a given state were working with a factory, and actually those factories were, you know, creating work and so forth. Had those 80% of those people had their own small businesses, a self-proprietor, then it would have been a single income, right? Because how do you separate your business's income, like a farmer, and a self-proprietor business, like a restaurant or what have you? So, in other words, what you're doing is you're creating this vacuum and opportunity to make more money as a government by supporting factories and basically getting more and more people working under the same roof. Because the more that factory makes, or the more that business makes, the better off they are. The more taxes, excuse me, had to sneeze there. The more taxes that the government is going to be able to bring in. And it's double tax, because they're taxing the corporation's income and they're taxing your income on what you're taking from it. But in a small business, they only get to tax the profits once. So they actually became aligned with corporations, and this actually happened in the Organic Act, in forming everything under corporations, and it was corporations or bust USA. And I'm not kidding. The paradigm was literally locked into corporations or bust USA, because they wanted to create larger and larger corporations, because when they did, they could control more people. Now, when we look at the economic engine of America, for the longest time, it used to be the private industry. I mean, the small business and self-proprietors and so forth. Well, guess what happened over COVID? More and more self-proprietors and small businesses were destroyed. Isn't that beautiful? They're not only killing people, but they're killing small business. They're forcing everybody into the conglomerate, and that way they actually have more control and they have a better way of making more money. So when we look at the way the Constitution was written, what is it about the Constitution where it protects corporations? It doesn't. As a matter of fact, the federal government has no control whatsoever over corporations because they can't create them. Even though the Organic Act, and this was a backwards way of what they did, because they basically said, okay, we're going to use the exclusive legislation of Washington, D.C. to create corporations. Well, hold on here. They can create a corporation that can function in Washington, D.C., but that corporation has no legal, it's not a legal entity to operate in the states or amongst the people. In other words, they can do something that they need for, you know, like a police. If they want to have a corporation of police, a police force, because that's the whole point of the exclusive legislation, to be able to do things that are necessary to govern that one little piece of land for themselves. But they can't create a corporation out of the government. The people created that. They didn't have the power to do that. They have exclusive legislation for things pertaining to the District of Columbia, but they could not, and they had no constitutional authority, but they claimed that they did. And they, because they pointed to that, and they said, see, we have this power to basically make our own legislation to do whatever we want. Ah, but they didn't have the specific power to change the government itself. That would have required an amendment and or the authority delegated, because that government is a Republican form of government, and they changed it to a corporate form of government. And they said, we've got it. We successfully taken America down. We opened the door, and now we're dragging America down. And they know, I'm telling you, folks, that they did it, but they didn't have the authority. The only thing that's going to save us are our state legislatures. And the only thing that's really going to save us, to get our state legislatures to save us, are your counties. But I digress. When we look at property rights, when you buy property, when you're given property, do you have to ask the state to allow you to live there? Does the state have any control over a person and the property that they purchased, their personal property? No. Especially if it's your primary property, if that's your home. Now, if it's a business, if you're buying property for business purposes, such as, you know, you want to have a second income, so you basically turn a house into a rental property. Now, that's business property. In other words, that business is now susceptible to public law and public access. Even though you'll have renters there, and those renters will want to have, you know, this right of privacy like it's their own home, and we try to extend that, that's not guaranteed, because that's not private property. That's business property. So let me ask you this. How does a business get the authority to operate? Now, you can do it on your own, and you can actually, you know, go out and start buying up homes and then start, you know, renting. But if you do, you're supposed to report yourself as a renting, you know, as a company that's renting. It's what happens is there's this little black market, folks, that, you know, people own property and they put a shed up and they say, oh, yeah, I'll rent that to you. And that's all under the table. Why do they do that? Adam Smith, in the book The Wealth of Nations, really exposes the fact that who do you blame? This is the underlying question. Who do you blame when people go out of their way to bypass taxation? When taxation becomes so oppressive that people become more and more creative in trying to bypass it. Why does taxation become oppressive when government starts spending beyond its real, true, defined needs? See, you've heard me say this all the time. Do we really have a taxation problem? No, we don't have a taxing problem. We have a spending problem. The reason that they're asking, I mean, shoot, we're paying for another country to prosecute a war. Where is that in the Constitution? Excuse me, where is that in the Constitution? Either we declare war and we fund a war, or they don't spend money on warfare. It's one thing for national defense. And some people say, well, you know, it's a strategic interest. No. What's a strategic interest is the Ukraine being aligned to become a state in the United States. That's a strategic interest. The other path we're talking about that they call a strategic interest is actually an interest of the corporate global governance world of control. It's about how they control it instead of how we, under the Constitution, free the people and that government. Because when they become a state in the union, they become free. The government becomes its own sovereign, but it has to align with the Constitution, and it has to be fully adapted into and adopting all of our laws, all our currency, language, all of those types of things. Even religion was one of those. believe it or not, the states did not allow a state to join the union, and Congress did not allow a state to join the union unless it had a certain percentage of Christians. And so I digress. We're talking about property rights, private versus public. And so we're talking about petitioning people on, you know, going and actually asking people to sign petitions to government for the redress of grievances. In other words, we're asking for not a large assembly. We don't need a permit. We just want, you know, the passerbys who, you know, want to actually sign on their way in to buying some goods in the grocery store and on their way home, just to sign, read these petitions, understand what we're doing, and get on board with signing these things. We have a constitutional right to do that. When these corporations, when these businesses say, we're going to open up a store to the public, does that mean that they can do anything that they want? No, not at all. As a matter of fact, a business is held to very specific codes and laws. Like, you know, the states now have passed this unconstitutional standing of the American Disabilities Act of access in and out of that. At your home, do you have to have a wheelchair entrance? No. Can I sue you for not having one? No. But I sure can sue them, because that's a public building, because it is registered to be open to the public. Folks, I can't make it any more simpler. When we look at a business is registered, and it basically identifies the type of business it's going to do. Why do they do that? Because the state needs to understand how they have to regulate them, how to go in and inspect. Oh, you're going to be handling food. Okay, so we're going to come. When you cook your dinner, does the state come in and check to make sure that your sanitation measures are correct? No. Oh, but the globalists, the communists, they want that. They want to have a social worker in every home to make sure that you're sanitary, you're keeping your kids clean from religious dogma and ideologies. I mean, folks, this is the path we're heading down. This is how close we are to it. Because now we've got lawyers, like lawyers at the ACLJ, that are basically accepting the redefining of private property. Private property belongs to an individual. A corporation cannot be a private property. Just because the Supreme Court deemed it so, that a corporation is just like an individual person and has those same rights, I'm sorry. They can't redefine the Constitution. And the federal government has no authority to make or have jurisdiction over corporations. Show me in the, you see, remember the whole jurisdiction clause, that all things arising under this Constitution are within the Supreme Court and the federal system's jurisdiction. This is why they have jurisdiction over that Article 5 convention. They don't have jurisdiction over corporations. The corporations aren't even mentioned. So how is it that they're actually governing labor? How is it that they're actually governing? It is through the assumptions. It is through this overreach that they said, you know what, we're going to do this. And they do. And voila, they have this governing. Folks, I can't make it more clear that at the state level, the state can't even make your corporations in that state private. They can't do it, because they actually have to regulate every business and what it is doing. When you register a business and get a business license, then they actually have some form of regulations and red tape that they've created to oppress you with. Now, I don't like a lot of the business licensing, a lot of the business taxation, all of that type of stuff. But bottom line, the state has that authority. The federal government does not. So when we look at private versus public, public means that you've actually got a license from the state. Public means that if you're going to do business and people are going to enter onto your property, they have the right. It's one thing if you have clients, right? If you're not open to the public, you just have clients that come in, like a law office. You can walk into it, and they're open for that, but they're not open to the public. That grocery store basically says, we want every, as a matter of fact, if you go to that grocery store, and let's say you're a woman, let's say you're a minority, let's say, you fall under some quote-unquote protected class, and that grocery store denies you service, can you sue them? Absolutely. Because of the color of law, they've created these regulations, but the state is enforcing these. See, here's the thing, and this is what we got into on a call on Tuesday, was that your state constantly creates laws that are not within your constitution. Show me in your constitution where you have created, because you may have a few states out there that do, but most states didn't. They just embraced this Civil Rights Act of 1964 and said, we're going to implement those laws. And it's one thing for them to say, we're going to implement those laws, but it's another thing to be able to enforce them. Because technically, the only type of laws that they can actually enforce and punish you for are those laws that you have delegated to them. Is it starting to make sense? Today, they actually enforce and punish you for laws they have no authority to basically do. And then they point to, well, you're violating this federal law. Oh, well, where is that in the Constitution? Is that law in pursuance to the Constitution? No, it's not. Then it's not applicable to this state. And this is where everybody's eyes just, it's like that deer, staring at the headlights in the dark. What? Huh? What do you mean it's not in the Constitution? The Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964. That's constitutional. No, it's not. The ACA, the ADA, is not constitutional. Folks, even though they give advantages to people who need it, it doesn't make it legal. It doesn't make it the law. It makes it this moral, good maybe. And this is how governments are destroyed, or this is how people are dragged into despotism, because we actually willfully surrender things when all of a sudden, we realize that they've aggrandized even more roles, more powers, Child Protective Services. Oh, now they, remember I told you that they can't come in and inspect the sanitation or anything of your home? They don't have the authority to do that. Oh, but you have a child now, and if you have a child, and as a matter of fact, here in America, where everybody grew up living in one, because the log cabins were just one big room. You had a stove over in one corner. You had some, mats or, blankets over in another corner where everybody bedded down. You had some chairs in another corner. I mean, everybody lived in one room. And today, they've got these laws that say, if you have a boy and a girl, you have to provide them separate rooms. And they can take your child if you don't provide them that. Where is that in the Constitution? Where, folks? Please show me how they can exert that type of authority over your family. First off, where is the power? So I'm brushing over a lot of things, but I've already brushed over a few things that need to be petitions, because as we start laying out all of these petitions, we will actually expose the fact that they don't have the authority to actually... Corporations like... Safeway or a food grocery store cannot ask the state to enforce a law that the state cannot enforce. So going back to the ACLJ, what I'm going to do, and I'm going to ask everybody, watch for my little post that I put on Mr. Sekulow's, page. And what I will ask is, if you agree with it, like it. If you don't, you know, put a mad face, but comment. Start commenting on the founder's page on Facebook, because I believe that I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that the individual we talk to, because it boils down to this, the individual we talk to has been accepting the redefining of our rights. They accept the living Constitution and how the Republican form of government, how the Privileges and Immunities Clause, how these things are not extended to U.S. citizens. And they're actually accepting these things instead of looking at the source documents, such as the 14th Amendment congressional debates, of how they define these things. What was the paradigm? And as a matter of fact, there's been great articles and studies that have actually come forward to actually prove that these redefinitions, and I'm going to tell you, I'm hoping to get Kurt Lash on this radio station. I want to get him, and I'd love to have him maybe as a regular contributor. He has gone through academic, painstaking, you know, efforts in exposing the truth about the 14th Amendment. And I just think that right there is so critical. There's so many people out there that have attacked this gentleman, and they argue against him. But even Scalia agreed. Go look at McDonald v. Chicago or the Heller case, how the Privileges and Immunities Clause does extend our constitutional rights to citizens of the states. It doesn't extend the Bill of Rights, only the privileges and immunities guaranteed to U.S. citizens. And this is where, you know, here's the epiphany, folks. When we look at a religion, because every state in the Union at the time of the Constitution, all the way up to the Civil War, almost every state had a state-sponsored church. And so did the federal government come and say you had to shut down your Anglican church, you had to shut down your non-denominational or whatever? No. The Puritans, you had to shut down? No. Why? Because the establishment of a religion, that particular clause was specifically defined for the federal government. When we actually look at the 14th Amendment, it only provides privileges and immunities for U.S. citizens, not the privileges for a state to have a church to be able to offer what we would call social services, or I should say temporal services, you know, compassionate services, welfare, you know, job training, those types of things, unemployment insurance or help. And so they had this symbiotic relationship that the church did it. It wasn't done by the state, because the state felt, and the paradigm at that time was, that government should never be involved in doing that, because when they do, they use an iron fist, which is why they actually created a guard to keep government out of those affairs directly, but they used tax dollars to support the philanthropic efforts of helping people, because they had this compassion and they offered that out to the people. What we need to do, and I need to bring this up, and maybe we'll bring it up next week on a Feedback Friday, is the hierarchy of legal superiority in this constitutional republic. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.